The beast is here. I've seen him. Bertie's seen him. Dietmar's seen him. With his black fur like a fancy lady's coat and those teeth like piano keys. We have to kill him. If we don't, who will? The Tommies, the Yankees, the Ruskies, the French? None of them will because they're too busy looking for other things. They want this and they want that. They're like dogs fighting over a bone that's got no meat on it. We have to do it ourselves. Get the beast before he gets us. Then everything will be better.
The boy Otzi readjusted his headgear as he led the others through the pulverized landscape of the Tommy-bombed city. He wore the English hard helmet he'd stolen from the back of a truck near the Ulster. Although it was not as stylish as the American or even the Russian helmets he had in his collection, it fitted him the best and helped him swear in English when he wore it, just like the Tommy sergeant he'd seen shouting at the prisoners at Hamburg's Dammtor station.
Oi, put your fucking hands up! Fucking up, I said, where I can see them! Dumb bloody fucking Huns!
Just for a moment, those men had failed to raise their hands. Not because they didn't understand, but because they were too weak from lack of food.
Dumb bloody fucking Huns!
Below the neck, Otz's clothes were a hybrid fashion of make-do invention, where rags and riches jumbled together. The dressing gown of a dandy, the cardigan of an old maid, the collarless shirt of a grandfather, the rolled-up trousers of a stormtrooper tied with the belt of a clerk's necktie, and the shoes, shredded at the toe, of a long-gone station master. The ferals, the whites of their eyes wide with fear and accentuated by dirty faces, followed their leader through the shattered scree. Weaving around the moraines of brick rock, they came to a clearing where the conical rocket of a church spire lay on its side. Otzi raised a hand to halt the others and reached inside his dressing gown for his Luger. He sniffed the air.
He's in here. I can smell him. Can you smell him?
The ferals sniffed like twitchy rabbits. Otzi pressed up against the lopped-off spire and inched towards its open end, gun out, guiding him like a divining rod. He paused and tapped the cone with it, indicating that the beast was probably within. And then, a flash of black as something bolted from inside out into the open. The ferals cowered, but Otzi stepped out, took a wide stance, closed one eye, aimed, and fired.
Die, beast!
The shot was muffled in the low, muggy atmosphere, and a tinkling metallic ricochet threw back the message that he'd missed his target.
Did you hit him?
Otzi lowered the gun and pushed it into his belt.
We'll get him another day, he said. Let's look for some food.
We've found a house for you, sir.
Captain Wilkins stubbed out his cigarette and placed his yellowed finger on the map of Hamburg that was pinned to the wall behind his desk. He traced a line west from the pinhead, marking their temporary headquarters, away from the bombed-out districts of Hammerbrook and St. Georg, over St. Pauli and Altona, towards the old fishing suburb of Blankenese, where the Elbe veered up and debouched into the North Sea. The map, pulled from a pre-war German guidebook, failed to show that these conurbations were now a phantom city comprised only of ash and rubble.
It's a bloody great palace by the river. Here.
Wilkins's finger circled the crook at the end of the Elbchaussee, the road running parallel to the great river.
I think it'll be to your taste, sir.
The word belonged to another world, a world of surplus and civil comfort. In the last few months, Lewis's tastes had narrowed to a simple checklist of immediate and basic needs. 2,500 calories a day, tobacco, warmth. A bloody great palace by the river suddenly seemed to him like the demand of a frivolous king.